You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Oh, no, sorry.
Welcome back to Community Connections. And, of course, being the second Wednesday of the month, it's our legal hour, and we've got the big CEO and hotshot Grant Hutchison with us, and also we've got Madeleine. Welcome to the two of you.
Good afternoon.
I didn't think anyone was going to talk.
Good afternoon already. Yeah. The day's gone fast, hasn't it? When you're with Alan, the day always goes fast.
Thank you. And the hour does go very fast. First of all, Madeleine, I believe this is the last time you're going to be with us. It's now time to move on to the next part of your life. But it's been a real pleasure to have you in, and we've really enjoyed your coming in, and I hope whatever you do in the future that it'll be a real success for you.
Thank you.
And we're always here on a Wednesday, so don't be a stranger. If pop in and say hello, or second Sundays when I'm here for hours, so call in, say hello.
Thank you.
Now, let's get back to business. We had a number of calls about potholes, and while we've all got our thoughts on the potholes, there were a couple of legal questions about what would happen if somebody swerved and a result of that there was an accident or somebody was killed. Who's responsible? Would the person have to be able to prove that Vic Rhodes knew that pothole was there? And I guess there's just... And who... Like, Vic Rhodes, from what I'm told, and we're not here to have a slag off at Vic Rhodes, but I thought the government departments were supposed to pay bills within 30 days. And we hear stories that some people have damaged their cars due to potholes, and 6 months later they still haven't been paid.
Yes, well, in relation to the first question where there's serious damage, the relevant authority will be responsible provided that negligence can be proved. So it's a matter of liability and the facts.
So, can I just stop it only for half a tick? So do you have to prove that, we'll say it's a Vic Rhodes, because they can be council roads too, but if it's a Vic Rhodes, to prove negligence, do you have to prove that they knew that the pothole was there?
Well, various things would be looked at, right, such as the character of the road and the type of traffic that could reasonably be expected to use the road, the standard of maintenance and repair appropriate for a road of that character used by traffic of that type, the state of repair in which a reasonable person would have expected to find a road or infrastructure of that character, whether the road authority infrastructure manager or works manager knew or could reasonably be expected to have known the condition of the road or infrastructure at the time of the relevant incident. And in the case where the road authority infrastructure manager or works manager could not reasonably have been expected to repair the road or the infrastructure or take other preventative measures before the relevant incident, whether the road authority infrastructure manager or works manager did display or could be reasonably expected to have displayed appropriate warnings. So it's all a matter of standards and usual practice and reasonableness. And so a court would look at all the circumstances and the usual practice of the road authority.
So you'd have to take it to court, wouldn't you? And it would be a civil case, wouldn't it?
Yeah, unless they agreed that they were negligent, and in which case you don't have to go to court. Yeah. But it would be a matter of what negotiations took place initially.
So there's a scheme that's set up, isn't there, Madeleine?
We'll just talk mainly ourselves here for a minute. But
that's right. I'm not aware of that.
Let me relay a story to you, because I think it's one thing to talk about potholes, it's another thing to relate. I was on a trip from Darwin back to Melbourne with my father and my son and my brother's son. Yeah. And we were travelling. We were out of Alice Springs, I think we were making it, but there'd been these heavy storms.
Yep.
And as we took off, with some gusto, we were leaving. not the best road in Alice Springs, or the road out or anything like that. In fact, it was the worst road, because because of the rain, suddenly potholes developed.
Yep.
And so right bang in the middle, like where cars go, I was just travelling, minding my own business, and bang, blew a tyre.
Yep.
In a big... It wouldn't have been over the 1600 and something. There's an inflation-adjusted figure that you can make a claim for.
Yeah, you know what that...
But that's Northern Territory, of course. But all I'd say is it can happen overnight, that a pothole can develop in, you know, with particularly in the Northern Territory. And it's one of those things that you've just got to watch. But in Victoria, I would say the state of our roads is something that's shocking, and people in the Yarra Valley know it as well as anybody, that this is terrible. There are parts of roads that are... Some of the main highways will always be Vic roads, but there'll be some that are council-controlled.
Yep.
So if the council lets it down, you wouldn't blame Vic roads, and you wouldn't blame Vic roads when it's the council type of road.
So you'd have to find out who owned the road too, wouldn't you?
Well, effectively, who's responsible for it.
And you mentioned $1,600. There's been a bit of a controversy. Some people say that it's around $1,600. Others say that Vic roads won't settle, won't even talk about anything under $5,000.
$1,640
is the
official figure.
And that's just the figure you heard about, CPI adjusted, because it gets adjusted every year.
Yep. All right, so, pardon me, under the scenario that I put to you, that this guy's been waiting 6 months, is that
you've
shouldn't
be...
You've
got to do it within 35 days, wasn't it? Or some there is a particular time you've got to... Look, you can't say, you know, 10 years ago I hit a pothole.
No, I mean that this guy submitted his claim straight after, and 6 months later he still hasn't been paid.
There's a notice of incident and claim form that has to be submitted.
Yep.
And that, I would say that is not usual for it to be 6 months.
Yep.
And should be quicker. But in some cases it might be necessary to issue a proceeding to get them going.
All right, we'll take a quick break and then we're going to come back with more.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Madeleine, you'd like to talk to... We've got Madeleine and Grant here from Hutchinson Legal, and they've... And if you've got a question that you want answered, it's probably getting a bit late now, but give us a ring on 59-615-991, 59-615-991, or send an email to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. And if we can't get it answered today, I'll put it to them next month because I'll be back each month, although Madeleine won't be. Madeleine, you want to talk about some rules or and laws about caravanning?
Yes, well, Alan, as I was thinking about what I am going to do in the next chapter of my life, it occurred to me that I might like to have a look around Australia. I've spent a lot of time overseas, but not around Australia. It caused me to think about the laws on caravanning. And whether I could just up and drive around and where I could stay and so forth.
And tow a caravan with you?
Yeah, well, I'd get some sort of drivable small caravan.
Yep.
And so the laws are probably pretty well known that you can't just pull up anywhere and sleep overnight.
But a lot do, don't they?
Yes, and there's confusing information on the internet, so you really need to look at the... bylaws and so forth of where you're intending to go. Yep. But as a rule, it is not legal, and you could face fines and so forth for doing so. But I did read that some people just pull up at rest stops and, you know, and they'll be joined by other people doing it. So I suppose by the time the police knew about that happening, they'd be on the way again.
And there are some free caravan spots too, aren't there?
Well, yes. For ones where you have to pay, obviously camping grounds or Parks Australia, Parks Victoria, managed parking, camping
local
grounds,
caravan parks,
all those
such.
Sorts of things. You don't need permits, and you just book. You need to book though, because there's various restrictions at peak times and so forth. But those designated camping areas are fine, so long as you can book and you comply with restrictions.
Yep.
But for anywhere else that you just want to pull up and prop, you do need a permit. So, So when I say you can't do it, you can do it with a permit, but just not without one. Yep. You know, you can't just choose a spot by the beach and stay there for a long time.
One of the things that we should just mention with caravan, and I know a few people do this, they pull up and try to stay the night at truck stops, and that's not really fair because the trucks can't... They have designated areas where they are allowed to stop.
That's right.
And they're usually big because, you know, all these trucks are big. And some people will insist, and I know the truckies get really mad about that.
Yes, and that would be a risk of a big fine and a big big penalty. Because
if the truckie takes it, a bit of, it might be worse than a fine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so that's definitely not a good idea. Private property you can stay on with the permission of the owner, provided it doesn't create a nuisance, which is noise or rubbish or any other nuisance. But after 6 months in some council areas, you do need a permit to do that, even on private land. So it depends on your municipality.
Yep.
So you can stay in a caravan park for up to 60 days without being considered a permanent resident, but after that you need a residence agreement with the owner.
Yep.
Or for 180 days for the year. They can accumulate the days. You can stay without a residence agreement. And what else? Obviously you need to comply with the road rules at all times, and you must have the caravan registered with Vic Roads.
And you've also the restriction on the car size compared to the caravan too, isn't there? You can't just tow a 40-foot van with a little Corolla or something, apart from the fact that the car wouldn't do it. There are laws that govern what size caravan you can have opposed to that car.
I would think that would be right. I didn't look into those, but I'm sure that common sense would prevail, and Vic Roads have got lots of... On their website, you can check all the requirements for caravans.
So you're getting ready to go.
Well, my daughter's moving interstate next year, and I've got friends in Perth I'd like to visit. So I thought, I've just been thinking, why not? So that might be something I do next year.
I reckon crossing the Dullamore would be terrible.
I wouldn't go on my own, no. I'd probably stick to the coastal regions. I'm just thinking about it.
My son-in-law had to go over to Perth for work and he drove. And, like, one day he gets up in the morning and 1,100 kilometres, he's still not even out of the state. You know, got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more.
The crystal chandeliers light up, the paintings on your wall, the marble statuettes are standing stately in the hall. But will the timely crowd that has you laughing loud help you dry your tears when the new wears off of your crystal chandelier? Never did fit in too well with folks you knew, and it's plain to see that the likes of me don't fit with you. So you traded me for the gaiety of the well-to-do, and you turned away from the love I offered you. Stately in the hall, but will the timely crowd that has you laughing loud help you dry your tears when the new wears off of your crystal chandelier? I see your picture in the news most every day. You're the chosen girl of the social world, so the stories say. But a paper smile only lasts a while, then it fades away, and the love we knew will come home to you someday. Oh, the crystal chandeliers light up, the paintings on your wall, the marble statuettes are standing stately in the hall. But will the timely crowd that has you laughing loud help you dry your tears when the new wears off of your crystal chandelier? When the new wears off of your crystal chandelier?
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Madeleine, I guess one of the things that we just didn't cover, but we should mention when we talk about this caravanning, one of the things that seemed to annoy quite a lot of other caravanners is these generators. Some people run them all night because they want to run an air conditioner in their caravan. So I know that they can cause a bit of trouble, even in a caravan park.
Yes, well, not being a caravanner yet, I don't know about all these traps and so forth, but that would be very annoying.
Yeah, and it can happen.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that we want to talk, we'd like to talk about, is funerals, eco-funerals.
Yes. So, as you know, I work in the Deceased Estates Department and estate planning and so forth, so I have no trouble talking about funerals, but one thing's come to mind lately is the fact that you can have a green funeral.
Yep.
And there's all sorts of alternate type funerals. But Lilydale and Healesville both have a service where you can opt, and there's a director of green funerals who can guide you in all of this.
Right.
But you can have a casket that's of of biodegradable materials or renewable timber, but the biodegradable materials can be cardboard, seagrass, bamboo, wicker, all these sorts of things that degrade.
Yep.
And also, if you didn't want to have a cardboard casket sitting up the front of the funeral of the chapel, you can rent a casket and have a cardboard insert so that it gets taken out.
Oh, can you? And then they take it out and bury that.
That's right. So you don't have to buy the whole thing.
It's unreal.
Yeah, so it's a lot cheaper.
Yep.
And then there are all sorts of options, like the body doesn't get embalmed in chemicals. It's kept cold until the day of the burial.
Yep.
It's dressed in biodegradable clothing such as cotton or hemp.
Yep.
The grave is marked with a natural grave marker, a tree or nothing, or a wooden little handmade sign or whatever you might want. And then if the person's cremated, it can be their ashes can be stored in what's called an echo water urn or an echo scattering urn. Or one idea I liked is a living urn, which is...
A living urn?
Yep, and that is... It enables you to grow a beautiful tree from the cremated ashes of the person who has died. The proprietary root protect additive, when mixed with the ashes and placed in a special biodegradable urn, enables the tree to flourish and grow a natural living memory. And that appealed to me.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. But on the wacky side, things are getting a bit wackier. There are things now like that are called aquamation.
Aquamation?
Aquamation is a alternative to cremation.
Yeah.
And it's where the body is, it's water cremation, and it operates at a much lower temperature than cremation and uses a fraction of the electricity, with the loved one being carefully placed in a potassium hydroxide and water solution that's heated to 93 degrees for a period of 4 hours. Each water cremation produces less than only 20 kilograms of greenhouse gases, a tiny amount compared to cremation. So that's something that's coming in. And there's even a couple of ones that I don't think are really used that much, but they're called... it's a freeze-drying called...
Freeze-drying?
Yes. I've just got to find the actual name of it. It starts with P and I can't find it. But it's freeze-drying and it reduces the body to a powder after it's been freeze-dried.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll have the name of it in a minute, but all these alternatives, and they're much more environmentally friendly.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, we'll take another quick break, and we'll be back with more.
Coming, stay down.
to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Madeline, we've got quite a few, pardon me, a few questions that we've put together, and it's about facial recognition. They were using it, or some of the shops were going to use it, and then they said they haven't used it, and we're not too sure whether they use it or not. But we want to know a bit, or we've had some questions about the facial recognition. When do the shop have to display a sign saying that we are going to use facial recognition? And if so, where's that sign got to be? Does it have to be at the front of the shop before you walk in, or can it just be a little sign down the back where nobody sees? When they use facial... I'll slow down for you to write it down. When they use facial recognition, is that videoed or does it just show up who the person is? And if so, if it is videoed, who's allowed to... or how long is it saved for? And who's allowed to have access to it?
They're all good questions.
We still keep going.
Yeah.
So my understanding is, or I shouldn't say me, it's the person who rang, is that the idea of this facial recognition is to show if a person's shoplifted before.
Yeah.
And so, all right, so therefore there has to be a database, because otherwise how can... You know, when the people walk in, how would you know who they, you know, that they have in fact been a shoplifter? So how was the database created? Who created it, and where is it? In other words, if you went into shop A, and you'd shoplifted there, does every other shop in Victoria or Australia have access to that, or is it only that particular shop? And the other thing is with it, what happens, what sort of safeguards, and we're talking, this is all legal now, what legal safeguards are there to make sure that somebody doesn't accidentally get onto that database that really shouldn't be there? So there's a lot in that question.
Yeah, there is. I've got a few ideas about the answer, but we'll save them for next time.
Yeah,
yes.
Save them for next time.
Yeah.
But certainly the people that have spoken to us all believe they are being used, that it is being used, although not many shops, I'm told, want to own up to it. So therefore, why haven't they got to put a sign up? They must... I mean... Every other thing, if you go into a shop, if they're going to do things for you, they normally have to put a sign up at the front and say, well, you know, you can't... if you're going to want to search their cases or their bags, you've got to have a sign up the front so that people who walk in that door know that they're giving up that right.
Are you talking about normal video surveillance?
No, we're talking about facial recognition.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Video surveillance is a bit different.
Yeah.
This is where they actually, we believe that the facial recognition is used just mainly so that people can say, yeah, that person shoplifted here before. But it may not necessarily be there. They want to know how that base was created in the first place.
Yeah. All right, very interesting questions.
All right, we'll take one more quick break and then we'll come back with more.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence but committed no crime. And bad mistakes, I've made a few.
Keep on fighting.
taken my bows and my curtain calls. You brought me fame and fortune and everything that goes with it. I thank you all, but it's been no bed of roses, no pleasure cruise. I consider it a challenge before.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I should just mention, because we did introduce Grant at the start of the show, Grant's had to go off and do something else, unfortunately, but he'll be back no doubt next time. But Madeleine's doing an excellent job filling in anyway. Madeleine, you've got a big film night coming up we've got to tell people about.
That's right, Alan. And before I do that, I just wanted to mention our spring newsletter is out, and it's got some interesting articles, bail being one of them that I know that we've talked
we've
about.
We've done plenty of old bail.
Yeah. And if anyone wants a copy of the newsletter or would like it, well, they can call in to 38 New Street and get a copy, or they can phone and be emailed a copy. But it does mention our client function, which is on the 16th of October.
But they don't have to be a client to come, do they?
No, yep. No. We're inviting everybody. So if they wanted to call and ask for tickets, they have numbers 9870-9870, and it's on Wednesday the 16th of October at Eastland, Hoyts Eastland, and it's the film is The Man from Snowy River, and it starts at 6 p.m. for a 6:30 start.
Sounds like a terrific idea. Madeleine, just there's a couple of other... I should mention Mark. Grant's come in, but anyway, well, let's just talk about a couple of fast facts there on your newsletter. The first person to be convicted was on the 20s... to be executed in the British colony of New South Wales was on the 27th of Feb in 1788.
For stealing food from government stores.
Yeah.
Yep. I knew that would interest you, Alan.
And
you're into more than punishment.
Well, I'm more into the next fact.
Bail, by the way.
Madeleine, we're talking about bail. I still keep getting questions on bail. In 1943 to 1940...
What do they do in some third world countries?
Oh, hang on, I haven't turned you on.
So, in some developing countries, what they do is they don't worry about the inconvenience of a trial. They Seriously, in some African countries, when groups went in from the West, they found that people had been in jail for 10, 15 years... Yep. Awaiting trial.
Yep.
Well, that's a good way. You don't... Why worry about the trial? Let them out after 25 or whatever.
Let them go.
But I think... And then you don't have to worry about bail either.
No. I believe in China...
Be careful.
Yeah, I shouldn't say that.
If you get executed in China, the family gets sent the bill for the bullet.
Do they?
Well, I think that's a myth.
I heard in one jurisdiction somewhere, and maybe it's not China, that they send an execution van around, and if you're found to the court, and if you're found guilty, they take them out and do it outside.
I do know that in...
you wouldn't be appealing.
Well, it's limited scope for an appeal. But I understand. Well, sorry, we're all maybe somewhat... Do you want to take a question about that for next time? Because we shouldn't... China's a great place. You've committed a crime.
I'm not sure it was there.
But I think the other thing is the thing that has happened, which I think their conviction rate is 99.99999%. It's like, and there are some places where if you're, it's impolite to oppose a conviction. it's like the state never gets things wrong in some places.
All right, I want to do something else first. The Cluedo board game was created by Birmingham resident Anthony Pratt to pass the time during the World War II air raid blackouts. How about that? I wonder where you got those facts from, Grant.
I'd ask my friend, my learned friend Madeleine, because she... You know where they get them, don't you?
Our learned friend, the marketing coordinator, Deb.
Comes up with it, does she?
By the way, Deb lives in the Yarra Valley. She probably is not listening to this program, but she should be.
She should be.
She'll listen to the podcast.
We won't say her surname because we don't want to have people visiting her.
All right. So I was just reading the other fact that you've got on the warm air. Oh, the warm air on the bare skin of your legs, on your arms, on the back of your neck. You hope that some of it even makes its way inside you. Well, warm air, there is a lot of work gone into the fact that some people really suffer, don't they, more depression in winter than what they do in summer.
Yeah.
That it does rise a bit, you know.
For sure. And the last little fact, the number of offenders proceeded against by police across Australia 2022 to 23 was 347,742.
Madeleine, I'm going to throw a question at you. You've been in the industry for 45 years. You've been with Grant here for 10. Without naming names, what's the most interesting case you've been involved in?
Oh, that's an easy one because...
Is it?
Yeah, it's mentioned in the newsletter. I was involved in the case in Mornington where the little old lady gave away her $15 million estate to the neighbours accidentally.
Accidentally?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
We've got an open mind.
Yep.
So that ran for 7 years with over 50 interlocutory applications. The trial went for 7 weeks. We actually lost, even though the judge found a lot of facts in our favour. He didn't take the $15 million from the neighbours, so we...
They still got it.
Yeah. We appealed and we settled at 5 o'clock on the Friday before the appeal started. And it wasn't a confidential settlement, so we got $4 million back.
So the neighbours still did well?
Yeah.
True.
Based on that findings, you'd have to say that the judge didn't have the concerns that the nephew had to the same degree.
Well, he did. That was the funny part, but he didn't quite have the chutzpah to take the money away from them. He gave an hour-long judgment saying they'd all these things.
Proven.
Lack of capacity for the last will. It was two wills that we were trying to set aside. Completely lack of capacity, everything present for the last will, he set that aside. But the second last will, he actually took the evidence of a lawyer, which is always has a lot more weight, where he said she did have capacity.
I think one of the most fascinating things about the judgment was that you can be in and out of having capacity. So often people think, they've got dementia or they've got first signs of dementia, therefore they can't do a will. And I think this judgment was a fascinating one because it meant...
She was borderline at that for the second last will. She was a little bit...
But you might have had a good day where you had capacity. Would that be... Or is that an oversimplification of it?
Well, yeah, that's a fact. But, I mean, I know the facts of this case really well. I believe she misunderstood what she was signing.
But we would affirm the judge's decision, and we would not say anything adverse.
No, well, I'm not touching it. I'm not ever going to question a judge.
Okay.
We want to be. Have we covered that other topic yet? Did you cover aqua?
Yes, we've done.
Yeah, we did that. Fascinating. You missed
I'm
that.
Sorry, I left for a little bit, but thank you for the break. We want to finish by saying something really nice about Madeleine.
I've been saying some nice things about her. You just weren't here to listen.
Well, what's your favourite memory of Madeleine, and your first and favourite?
Well, I've got to say that I learned a lot about Madeleine, and I'm not going to go into it, when we did Choice Tunes. Yes. And I think she's a fascinating lady. I'd like to sit... I really mean this. I'm not trying to do in the pocket or that sort of rubbish. I think she's had a fascinating life, and part of it hasn't been as good as it could have been. And I reckon she should write a book about her life.
That's what they said at another place we've been at recently. I think she finished with the comments... That'll remain an open.
That is an open book. That's a very big possibility.
Yeah. Well, I
thank
think
you.
Where you started and where you finished is you know, we're not going to go into it, but you did tell us a bit of Choice Tunes, and I just think it's been a fascinating life for her.
Thank you.
And every life has things that go terrifically well, and others have, and you know, the parts of life that aren't so good, but. I think Madeleine's come through the whole experience of life very well.
Thanks,
I really do.
Thank you.
And I'd hate to be running the case against her. Not that I'm a lawyer, but
yeah, no, we're going to miss Madeleine and value the input that she's made over many years. And but no, look, have you passed on some questions for next time?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, can I give you one more question? Because I think this was in the Good Weekend this week.
Was it? Yeah.
Where somebody peeked into the yellow-littered wheelie bin of a neighbour.
Yeah.
And they got caught using somebody else's bin. And the question is it a crime to put your rubbish in someone else's bin? What do you think?
I would think no, because I know people have done it to me on a number of occasions. It's a very annoying thing to happen.
Just because they've done it to you doesn't mean it's not a crime.
No.
Or should it be a crime?
I think it should be. Only because...
And no bail?
Okay, then. But the only reason why I say that is if somebody just had a cardboard box and put it in the recycle bin, I couldn't care less. But I've had people put some all sorts of terrible stuff in my bin, and I don't think that's at all fair.
No, that's not. Well, the other thing that I just wanted to mention, because this is also...
I'm going to show one back at you.
Well, okay, you go first.
Right, because we're running out of time. You put the rubbish out the front, not your general rubbish. You know, you put your rubbish out to be collected, and where I live, you have to book... You don't get a yearly clear, and they come and they put a sign on it and says, you know, you're not allowed to take any of this, you can't add to it, you can't take away. Why can't you take it away? Because it'd be better for somebody to take it than the council to take it down the tip.
So let me deal with that, because that's not really a legal question. That's an economic question.
Well, it's illegal, because they tell you what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know why.
So partly, once things are put out on the curb,
yep,
and you've booked it, then effectively that's ready for collection by council. Now, you can take things back, because they were yours, but as I understand it, you can take things back yourself. But for you to go through, council actually, they've got a contract where people come and collect.
Yep.
Part of it is they assume there's going to be some scrap metal and other things. So the people collecting, the price they pay is based on the fact that they'll be able to
get some
stuff that's saleable.
Yep.
Now, if scavengers go through and take out the good stuff, all the metal and all the copper or whatever it is that you can take, then effectively council has to pay more for the next year's contract, because all the good stuff's gone. There's always good stuff amongst... It's not so much that you're taking some chair that somebody will value.
But sometimes it is furniture.
It can be. So I think it is considered a crime, as I understand it. And I think what we've always said to people, the summary is, if you see something you like, go up to the front door.
Knock on the door.
And I've done this before.
Yeah.
Knocked on the door and said, look,
is it okay if I take... And effectively there, you become their agent to take it. So it's not some stranger taking it. It's on behalf of the owner, you're taking something back. That's one way. And a quote to finish.
Yeah, I was going to say you wanted one more thing.
A former US Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright.
I remember her.
Yeah, she was famously quoted as saying, and this does not apply to Madeleine. But she said there's a special place saved in hell for women who don't support women. And one of the things that's very strong about Madeleine's involvement at Hutchinson Legal is she leaves behind a department that has associates, all sorts of female associates. And so she's really leaves behind a fantastic legacy. So thanks for that, Madeleine.
Thanks for coming, Madeleine. I really wish you all the best in
Thank
the future.
Thank you, Alan.
It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Thank you to you, Grant. You didn't spend much time with us, but anyway, next time. And, of course, we'll have them back same time next month.